Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we are learning in court today whether Paul Manafort will mount any defense at all in his Mueller investigation trial or just send his case to the jury with the argument that the Mueller team failed to prove their tax evasion and other financial chicanery charges beyond a reasonable doubt. Franklin Foer from The Atlantic has made the Paul Manafort big picture his main beat all this year. His article just before the trial was called "This is So Much Bigger Than Paul Manafort." Another one back in the winter was called "The Plot Against America." Franklin Foer joins us now. And thanks for doing this, Franklin. Welcome back to WNYC.
Great to be here.
Before we get to any breaking news from the courtroom, your article before the trial began with the assertion that the Manafort trial should be seen as part of the same story with Treasury Secretary Mnuchin casually announcing that the Trump administration might give another $100 billion tax cut to the wealthy without even going through Congress. Can you tie those two things together for us?
Right, because my argument was that this was a form of they were both engaged in forms of looting the resources of the state in order to enrich themselves, in order to enrich elites, that we live in this age of money laundering, where there's so many fortunes around the world that have been built through outright theft, what's called kleptocracy. You have elites who've come to power, especially in the former Soviet Union, where Paul Manafort operated, who amassed incredible fortunes in the immediate aftermath of the fall of the Soviet Union, where through violence, through outright theft, they were able to take control over the resources of the old state. And in order to protect those resources that they looted, they had to put their money in safe havens. And so, because they were always worried that the money would be reappropriated by whatever government came next. And they also wanted to put the money in places where there's effectively rule of law, and their money could grow safely. And so you have this mass exodus of resources. But it's also of a piece with things that we've seen all over the world. Panama Papers, Paradise Papers, where you have elites kind of secretly taking money offshore into places where they're not paying any tax. And this is the scourge of global corruption. And Paul Manafort is an important figure in the history of global corruption because it was something that he's been working on, not just in Ukraine, where he played a central role working with a corrupt clique of former gangsters, helping them win power and then rule the country for several years. But even before then, in the 1990s and the 1980s, when he was one of the first people in Washington to be a full-service consultant to the dictators of the world.
Hmm. Would you define the word kleptocracy for our listeners? Because it's really central to your reporting, and I think it's one of those words that a lot of people hear but don't quite understand.
Well, so you have elites who've amassed power on the basis, as I said, of actually, you know, in some respects, stealing money. But it's this game that elites play where they try to seize control over the state in order to essentially both protect their wealth, but also to further enhance it.
Right.
And Ukraine is kind of the classic example of that, where you had a group of like I said, former gangsters from the eastern part of the country who were eager to seize control of the country because they were worried that their political enemies would do damage to their fortunes, but also they saw the state as this incredible opportunity for getting even more rich. And that's something that Paul Manafort was directly a part of when he was working in Ukraine.
And klepto refers to steal. A kleptomaniac is somebody who can't control the urge to steal. And so as it pertains to the United States, you're telling a three-decade story of the U.S. thinking, those more well-meaning people in the U.S. government, that the global economy, after the collapse of the Soviet Union, would clean up corruption elsewhere, like Italy and Brazil are two examples you use, Italy and Brazil. But instead, as the economy globalized, winding up with our country becoming infected with it to the max, and Paul Manafort being one of the architects of this sorry world order. So what's the big picture of corruption and kleptocracy that you see as it pertains to Paul Manafort and the United States?
So over time, this is where you have these two trends intersecting, where you have the rise of global corruption, but you also have kind of the rise of libertarianism as it pertains to various parts of the U.S. economy, where it's become so easy to create shell companies where wealth is anonymous, which means that it's easier to shift wealth around the world. And as you said, the United States has thought of itself as a place that is on the side of the angels when it comes to the scourge of kleptocracy. But the truth is that dirty money wants to be in the United States, and through law firms, through real estate, there's loopholes that have just opened up and have expanded that have made it much easier for that money to move into this country. And so you have examples like, this is going to sound pretty disconnected from Paul Manafort, but I think it actually is connected, like the sovereign wealth fund of Malaysia, this government-owned fund in Malaysia that was stolen. $1 billion were stolen, and $540 million of that money ended up in the United States. It's easy to move money here. And you look at what Paul Manafort was doing, what he stands accused of in this trial, it's of amassing a fortune in Ukraine that he parked in Cyprus, which is a notoriously lax banking system that Russians and people from that part of the world have exploited, and then finding opportunities to move that money into the United States, which he did through the purchase of suits, as we've seen graphically described in this trial, where he was spending, you know, well over $500,000 a year on getting bespoke clothing, in purchasing things associated with real estate, multimedia systems for his house in the Hamptons, landscaping work, etc. He found places where our system is weak, where we don't ask a whole lot of questions, where it's very easy to move this dirty fortune back into the country. And he would have gotten away with it had he not joined up with the Donald Trump campaign in March of 2016 and made himself a figure of great attention.
Wait, you just made the connection that nobody's making in court. He would not have gotten away with it, and of course that presumes his guilt, but if he's guilty, he would not have gotten away with it were it not for his connection with the Trump campaign as campaign manager in 2016?
That's correct. So the FBI had paid some attention to Paul Manafort and to his primary deputy, his associate, Rick Gates, in 2014. And they'd asked them questions in association with their work in Ukraine because they were concerned about dirty money flowing out from Ukraine into the United States. But really, those questions were ultimately harmless questions. And nobody would have paid any attention to what Paul Manafort did because he would have been a relatively anonymous figure here. But in March of 2016, he took this enormous financial gamble to go work for Donald Trump, first as a guy who was managing his delegate count in the Republican primary, then to becoming his campaign chair for several crucial months in 2016.
Listeners, if you're just joining us, my guest is Franklin Foer from The Atlantic, who has spent much of this year writing big picture articles on the big picture of the world as seen through the charges against Paul Manafort, and that trial is continuing in court today. 212-433-WNYC, if you have a question, 212-433-9663. 9-2. So, Franklin, the trial of Manafort is supposedly not related to Mueller's collusion or obstruction of justice investigations, and the judge has instructed both sides not to bring those things up. But Manafort was there at the infamous Trump Tower meeting with Russian representatives that Donald Sr. and Jr. have lied about so much. Is there a connection you would draw, even if not admissible in court, to the Mueller main events?
Yes, which is, you know, everybody is so eager to get to resolution on the question of Russian collusion with the Trump campaign that we're not prepared to sit back and to say that this is whatever happened may be complicated, and we may have just the foggiest notion of what actually happened. But when I look at Rick Gates and Paul Manafort and what we've learned about them in court, the pattern of behavior is one of impunity, where they were willing to take incredible risks in order to enrich themselves. And we know that Paul Manafort was in desperate financial situations when he joined up with the Trump campaign. And so it's just hard to imagine, and this is not evidence, this is the purest speculation, but it really is hard to imagine that these characters, Manafort and Gates, the two principals in the campaign hierarchy, would have suspended their characters, would have ignored their dire financial conditions during this period when they're running the campaign. And in fact, we've seen emails that Manafort had exchanged with another deputy of his in Ukraine called Konstantin Klimnik, where Manafort is quite open in saying that he's willing to trade his position at the top of the Trump campaign in order to pay back debts in whatever way he can to a Russian oligarch called Oleg Deripaska, to whom he owed, you know, at least $10 million, but probably a much greater sum than that.
Bob in Rego Park. You're on WNYC with Franklin Foer. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Brian. How you doing, guy?
All right.
My question is this. You know, Paul Manafort made $60 million in a five-year period. Basically, my question is, given that if he would have simply just paid his $16,500,000 taxes and been honest about that, did he actually, besides that, do anything illegal? My point is that if everybody simply paid their taxes, you could live a beautiful life without all these headaches.
Right. Well, that's well put. I mean, I think that is true. I think it's true that he could have paid his taxes and he would have avoided this Rube Goldberg financial system that he concocted for himself that's come out in this trial, that by trying to move all this money around. There are a couple problems with that, though. Number one is that his money was not clean to begin with. His money was paid to him by Ukrainian oligarchs who'd obtained their money in very dirty fashion and who couldn't possibly have paid him in a way in which it would have been easy to ingest that money into the U.S. Financial system. That there was so much funny business in the way that Manafort managed everything. And that's the other thing that's become clear in the course of this trial, because he's on trial for two things. One is tax fraud, and the other is bank fraud, that he had lied in the course of applying for loans from a bank in Chicago. And so everything about the way that Paul Manafort had set up his finances, the ways that he accumulated property, it was kind of a Ponzi scheme that he had created. So, yes, it would have been probably much simpler for him if he paid his taxes. But the work that he did in Ukraine, which he actually extended over 10 years, was coming into this kind of crazy setup that he had here, where he had way overextended himself. He purchased far too much property. He was using that money to fund a lifestyle that was something that he simply couldn't afford, even with all the money that you described.
Assuming he really did commit tax fraud or bank fraud, I want to clear up something that you said before that I may have misunderstood and communicated it inaccurately to the listeners. Two callers have called off the air in the last few minutes and said they think that you said Manafort would have gotten away with it had he not gone to work for the Trump campaign. And I heard you and repeated as saying he would not have gotten away with it had he not gone to work for the Trump campaign. Which did you actually say?
No, he would have gotten away with it.
Yeah. Because that brought him to the attention of prosecutors.
Yes.
That makes more sense. Well, you also write that Manafort tried to exploit the Trump campaign with his kleptocratic aims. What were those within the campaign? And importantly, might Trump be more of a victim of Manafort's than an accomplice?
Right. Well, that's possible. I mean, it really, we don't know. So there are two things that we've seen some evidence of. One is the one that I mentioned, where he was in touch with this Russian oligarch, Oleg Deripaska, to whom he owed money, and he was dangling the possibility of private briefings on the Trump campaign. And he wrote in an email to his deputy that he wanted to find a way to use the campaign to, quote unquote, get whole with Oleg Deripaska. And then the second narrative that we've seen in the course of this trial relates to this bank in Chicago called Federal Savings Bank, which was run by an ex-Army guy called Steve Calk. And Calk, it's still a little bit foggy, but what we know is that Calk ran a small bank and that Calk wanted to get into the Trump campaign and to the Trump administration. And Manafort had applied for a loan from Calk's bank, and he was rejected because the loan officers at the bank and the other junior officials looked at his record and they said, there's no way we're giving this guy money. But Calk was able to obtain, it seems like with help from Paul Manafort, a post as one of Donald Trump's 13 official economic advisors. And the day that Manafort was fired from the Trump campaign, he started up an LLC. And over the course of the next couple of months, he received $16 million in loans from Calk Bank over the objections of the employees at Calk Bank.
So let me jump in on that, because this is now, I think, becoming one of Manafort's main arguments of defense, at least against the bank fraud charges, that if this Mr. Calk, who runs that bank in Chicago, wanted to give him loans that he wouldn't be qualified for because Calk wanted a quid pro quo, a connection to get a position in the Trump administration, that's not Manafort's fault, right? He just applied for the loans. Calk approved loans that Manafort wasn't financially qualified for by ordinary standards. If that's really how it played out, then that's an argument for Manafort's innocence, no?
Well, if Manafort had been straight, perhaps, on his bank forms, then I guess maybe you could make an argument like that. But I think that the argument is also that in the course of making those applications for those loans, that he wasn't straight about what he owned and what he owed.
Right, because it may be corrupt, but it might not be illegal to say, I'll get you in with the Trump people if you give me this loan. But if he also lied on the application, then that's another story. Let's take another call. Carol in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Carol.
Yes, owing to this conversation of the international extortion ring that Trump is running, I think it augurs well for a bill that should be passed demanding or insisting that people who run for president and vice president of the country show their taxes and go in a clawback period of at least 10 years, as has been the norm, but it has not been written down.
Carol, I'm just going to say, in fairness, that Trump hasn't been accused of international theft here. Manafort has been accused of the things we've been talking about, but I just don't want to overstate with respect to Trump what's not there. But go ahead.
Wilbur Ross sits at his right arm. He's one of the three people that runs the Cyprus Bank. He's a, one of the three board of directors of the Cyprus Bank.
The Commerce Secretary.
He has been with, you know, he has taken on the Deutsche executive that was fired after the money laundering scheme that was unearthed in New York City. So therefore, there are so many tentacles in the Chinese, Russian, and Iranian deal that have to do with international shipping lanes and trade. And Wilbur Ross has been around this game for 50 years.
Carol, I'm going to leave it there. And I think a lot of what she says is pretty well documented. I don't want to get off on on Wilbur Ross, but, you know, her central question about requiring presidential and vice presidential candidates, or once they're in office, to reveal 10 years of their tax returns to make sure that they aren't involved with any of these kinds of corruption or conflicts of interest. I think some people thought that the Manafort trial might leverage out Trump's tax returns, but it now looks like it's more likely to be the Michael Cohen trial, if there is one.
Yeah. Well, I just to add, one is that real estate is just a part of the American economy that has been especially attractive to kleptocrats and to people who aspire to launder their money, because the Patriot Act, if you remember that, it did a lot to actually bolster American money laundering laws, and it's made our financial system much harder to crack if you're trying to bring dirty money onshore here. But real estate just happens to be something that's been exempted, that the real estate industry itself has lobbied to maintain its exemption, which was initially meant to be a temporary thing. And so you end up with a guy like Donald Trump, who's made his fortunes such as they exist through real estate. And you could see how Russians, especially the Russian elite, were so eager to buy up property there. That's I think in part because Trump did a great job of marketing himself in Russia, and there's some sort of affinity between Trump and the Russian elite. But also because he just holds the type of properties that kleptocrats like to buy. And so I think that the tax return idea is one I could get behind. But I also think, you know, the fundamental thing that we need to do as it relates to the broader system is close down some of these most obvious boulevards through which dirty money travels into the country. And so that means real estate. And we need to have just there's a connection between the tax returns and these broader questions, because culturally, as a matter of erecting new norms, we just have to be much more rigorous as a nation. And so my hope is that the attention on Paul Manafort does some small part in restoring some rigor to the system and helping to reset our norms as it relates to corruption.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. We are New York and New Jersey Public Radio, with just a few minutes left with Franklin Foer from The Atlantic, who's devoted much of his reporting time this year to a big picture look at the implications of the Paul Manafort trial for American and global democracy, clean government, corruption, as well as some of the things that you know everybody's been asking with respect to Trump and collusion and obstruction of justice potentials. And we're almost out of time, Franklin. Do you think Mueller has proven his case against Manafort? You know, apparently between Rick Gates's credibility problems and a fine line between Manafort and Manafort's wife's responsibility for tax reports on paper that they're claiming, there are some gray areas?
Well, the defense attorneys have found things to pick at. But the problem for Paul Manafort's defense is that there's just so much written down on paper that ties Paul Manafort directly to the crimes of which he is accused. And so you could look at certain things and you could argue them away in the way it, along the lines that you've just suggested, but that when you start to sift through the evidence that's been introduced, Paul Manafort is directly ordering the transfer of money from Cyprus to various things in the United States. There's none of Rick Gates' fingerprints on a lot of the documents. His wife is there, but in the testimony of his accountants, I think are just that was so powerful and irrefutable. Mm-hmm. And I think actually Gates was a pretty strong witness as well, even though he's clearly got he's got some credibility problems.
So it's not really Gates who's going to convict him so much as these nobody gray-suited, I don't know what they were really wearing, green-shade accountants who are going to make
Well, I think it's...
Go ahead.
It's just the totality of the evidence.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really... If this case was hanging on one document or one witness,
yeah,
I think it would have been easier for the defense to pick holes, but the prosecution just amassed such a wide array of witnesses. I mean, and think people like the Taylors who came in from Los Angeles and New York, who were able to kind of pretty directly explain how they were getting paid out of banks in Cyprus, and Manafort was the one who was directly ordering the transfers of money. It's just...
you don't mean a family named the Taylors. You mean the Taylors, who actually made us $15,000 ostrich suits and things like that, right?
Those are the ones. Those are the ones. And believe me, it makes for pretty entertaining courtroom drama to see characters like that kind of drift in and out.
But importantly, it sounds like you're not as concerned as a lot of the hand-wringing pundits who I've been seeing on cable and even, you know, in print in some of our most respectable newspapers, who are a little afraid that the jury might have their eyes glaze over at all this documentary evidence that they have to look at and squint at, and just go, ooh, I don't like that Rick Gates. I don't believe that Rick Gates, and acquit Manafort on that basis. Sounds like you're not as concerned as some of those others.
Well, it's possible, right? It only takes one juror to throw a wrench in a trial.
Yeah.
So something like that could happen. But I just think that any fair person who sat and listened to the evidence amassed would have found it convincing in just its scope and weight.
And if Manafort is acquitted, final question, do you fear for the future of the collusion and obstruction investigations by Mueller? And conversely, if he's convicted, does it put more wind behind Mueller's sails in a way that it would make it harder for Trump to fire him one way or another?
So I would be concerned for the Mueller team if it wasn't able to put up a win here. I think that would if you've looked at the team from afar, they have this reputation for being fearsome, for being all-star. There are all these great lawyers from all these fancy firms who've gone and taken pay cuts to work for Mueller. And I've watched them in court, and I got to say, I've been less impressed than their reputation suggests.
Huh.
I haven't found, you know, a lot of them aren't litigators. They're people who may be amazing lawyers in whatever practice they have on a daily basis. But arguing in court is another thing. And they've been placed up against a judge who is a very difficult judge, who's tried to manage the trial to go along at an incredibly quick clip, and who's had a lot of persnickety rules that he's imposed on the trial. For instance, he's prevented them from referring to Manafort's Ukrainian backers as oligarchs. And he's consistently told them that they can't try Manafort for being wealthy or for having a lavish lifestyle. And none of those things should be unreasonable in the abstract, but I haven't found the Mueller people to be especially deft in responding to circumstances that aren't ideal from their perspective.
That's so interesting. Well, let me throw in one addendum here. since you've been covering it in the courtroom, is there any news this morning? I think we're waiting to find out, now that the prosecution has rested, whether the defense is even going to call any witnesses or whether they're just going to give it to the jury and say Mueller hasn't proved his case.
Well, I'm actually, I can't help you there. I don't actually know the answer to that right now. I'm not there this morning, and I haven't. I think things kick off in just a little bit.
Yeah, and I'm not seeing anything on the wires or online, so I think we're going to learn the answer to that question momentarily, but we haven't yet. Franklin Foer has been covering the Manafort trial and looking at it through the biggest picture possible lens of the global economy, global corruption, and U.S. corruption, and with such great insight. Thank you very much for sharing it with us.
Real pleasure. Thank you.